live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about the latest on health and healing and the environment, especially since Los Angeles and even downtown Los Angeles and Bel Air are in flames, a lot of that area. It went from a six-acre brush fire to 150 acres overnight and is growing. Even Rupert Murdoch's home, a $24 million piece of property, burned to the ground, and a lot of others in that area. So shouldn't we now pay attention to the biggest fire year in California history, over 1 million acres burned? We will. Also, yesterday we played part one of what's to come and what are we not paying attention to. I'm going to add part two today, but also some new research about how the U.S. military invests in a doomsday genetic plan. You got to hear what this is, and this has been going on for some time. So I'll share that with you. My guest in the second part of our program today will be Rabbi Michael Lerner. And Rabbi Michael Lerner is clearly one of our nation's greatest Jewish intellectuals and spiritual political activists. So we're going to talk about why moving Israel's capital to Jerusalem is so perilous to peace in the Middle East. Now, most people have only seen the headlines, and depending upon the political persuasion of the media, they give you a biased report more often than not. Rabbi Lerner will give you an accurate report, and then I'm going to show you something you did not know about every single one of our 100 senators signed a pledge to Israel that they would not condemn it no matter what violations they engaged in. This was to the UN. So you'll see how all this comes together. Also today, I will open the lines to your input. I'm going to talk about some other issues that impact us, like the real unemployment rate is not 4.2%. It's over 24%. Why aren't we getting that? I'll explain that. And a lot of economists now believe that our economy is in a giant bubble and is about to burst. If time permits today, I also want to spend time on the new slave labor in America, the prison system, and also all those nasty phone calls you get about how much money you owe because you were late on a credit card. Who are these people? Well, I'm going to show you who they are, the name of their companies, and what they can do to you today. So that's our program. I won't get to everything. I'll get to as much as I can. Let's begin from the School of Medicine at Temple University. A new study published in Scientific Reports talks about canola oil. Now, I don't recommend canola oil today. There was a time when I did if it was organic and cold pressed. But the what you get today is not good. It's linked to worsening memory and learning ability in Alzheimer's. In fact, canola oil is one of the most widely consumed vegetable oils in the world. Yet surprisingly little is known about its effects on health. Now a new study published in Scientific Reports by researchers at the Lewis Katz School of Medicine, Temple University, show that using canola oil in the diet will, with worsening memory or worsening learning ability and weight gain in this experiment, especially if there's Alzheimer's disease. So this study is the first to suggest that canola oil is more harmful than helpful for the brain. So I suggest not using canola oil. It's that simple, especially when you can use so many other good and healthy oils. Now, how could you stop Alzheimer's? I believe that it's completely doable because I've done it, not once, but twice. I'm working now to do in the spring a large study. My goal is 100 people with Alzheimer's, advanced Alzheimer's, and work with them to show the power of a lifestyle modification. I've worked with individuals and helped them, but not with a large group. Also, I'm going to be doing a study starting in late January and February on Lyme's disease. I believe that there is now a protocol that can substantially ameliorate Lyme's disease. In fact, there's one community upstate that has so many of its members who have Lyme's disease that they would be a study to themselves. There's like 50 of them in one community. And one of the people I spoke to had been infected four times in the last year alone because they're, you know, they're woods. And so all those bucolic scenes, boy, you don't want to be sitting under a tree looking at the cows graze because you wake up and you'll have some ticks on you. So what we know now is this, and this is from France, from a Polytechnic Federal in Lausanne Institute, that a healthy mitochondria, those are the energy factories in your cells, could stop Alzheimer's. Now, Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia and neurodegeneration worldwide. A major hallmark of the disease is the accumulation of a toxic plaque in the brain, formed by the abnormal aggregation of a protein called beta amyloid inside the neurons. Still without a cure within orthodoxy, Alzheimer's poses a significant burden on public health systems, and most treatments focus upon reducing the formation of amyloid plaques, but these approaches have been inconclusive. As a result, scientists are now searching for alternative treatment strategies, one of which is to consider Alzheimer's as a metabolic disease. Now, taking this line of thought, a group of scientists looked at mitochondria, which are the energy-producing powerhouses of the cell, and thus central to metabolism. And using worms and mice as models, they discovered that boosting mitochondria defenses against a particular form of protein stress enables them to not only protect themselves, but also to reduce the formation of amyloid plaques. Let me put it a little different way. During normal aging and age-associated diseases like Alzheimer's, your cells face increasing damage and struggle to protect themselves and replace dysfunctional mitochondria. Now, since the mitochondria provide energy to the brain cells, leaving them unprotected in Alzheimer's disease favors brain damage. And that gives rise to symptoms like memory loss over the years. The scientists identified two mechanisms that control the quality of mitochondria. First, the mitochondrial unfolded protein response, which protects mitochondria from stress stimuli. And second, mitophagy, a process that recycles defective mitochondria. Now, both these mechanisms are the key to delaying or preventing excessive mitochondria damage during disease. And while we have known for a while that mitochondria are dysfunctional in the brains of Alzheimer's patients, this is the first evidence that they actually try to fight the disease by boosting quality control pathways. So this is good news. Now, in just another way, going back about, I'm going to guess it's around 8 years now, I did a study on the brain. To get into the study, you had to have many years of brain damage, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS. We treated it all. And it was supervised by a board-certified neurologist, yet nothing in the study was medical. I've never had any medical applications in these studies. It's always lifestyle and behavior modification with emphasis upon rebalancing the cell's chemistry. And we gave so many antioxidants into each person each day that what they're talking about of helping the mitochondria, we were able to do with massive overloading of antioxidants, which reduces oxidative stress, turns off inflammation in the cell, and then give those nutrients like phosphatidylserine and glycerophosphorylcholine and choline and inositol and B-complex and folic acid and B12 and all the full spectrum of about 30 different nutrients. All of those nutrients, like L-carnosine and resveratrol, all of them known to have a positive impact upon the brain, telomeres, and the mitochondria. Today we would use NAD or NPPQ. But we had the same results. First, you turn off the inflammation, then you begin to heal, and you create new dendrites, and you help stimulate the brain to rejuvenate itself. And hence, people reverse their disease. Completely reverse multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease, made major improvement in myasthenia gravis. I didn't have anyone with ALS, but Alzheimer's, completely reduced it to the point where the person was invited to a scientific conference in Washington, D.C., and the conference didn't know this. Normally, these conferences are excruciatingly boring, and you have thousands of people in this gigantic room of one of these convention centers, and they're all sitting there with their laptops, and you have a PowerPoint presentation, and your article, for all intents and purposes, is being scrolled down in the graphs and the charts, and you refer to it. And I got up there to do my 22-minute presentation as one of the keynote speakers because of the study. And instead of dealing with the study, I brought out the people, like I reversed autism completely, brought out Jonathan Ortega and his parents, and brought out the person with Alzheimer's, and brought out, reversed the all the conditions in menopause. And it shocked them because they had never done any of this, no matter what were they work were they doing with stem cells. So the mechanisms work, but there are different ways of getting there. So for anyone listening now who's a physician, we have lots of physicians listening, or nurses, or holistic nurses and dentists. The key is you've got to first detoxify the body. That means detoxifying the liver, the kidneys, the brain. Then you rejuvenate those same organs. Realistically, it's going to take you a year and a half to 2 years, but you'll start seeing results within 4 weeks. So that's good. Now, a new Lyme disease test could offer quicker, more accurate detection. Rutgers University and Harvard University and Yale University worked together. They brought this out and published it in Clinical Infectious Disease. And these new tests detect early Lyme's disease, which is increasing beyond the summer months, and could replace existing tests that often do not clearly identify the infection before health problems occur. And in the analysis, the scientists, also from the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease of the National Institutes of Health, they came up with a new way, new methods to offering a better chance of more accurate detection of the infection from the Lyme bacteria. Quote, new tests are at hand that offer more accurate, less ambiguous test results that can yield actionable results in a timely fashion. The improved tests will allow for earlier diagnosis, which should improve patient outcomes. Okay. That's what they're doing. I'm doing a new clinical study on Lyme's disease in about a month and a half. It'll be a short program. It'll take only a month based upon the uniqueness of the protocol. I won't discuss it anymore until after the results. Then you'll see what the results are. But Lyme's disease is the most common tick-borne infection in North America and Europe. And there are currently 300,000 cases of Lyme's disease every year in the United States alone. And the disease is increasing and spreading into new regions. And Lyme's disease frequently, but not always, presents with a bullseye rash. And when the rash is absent, the laboratory test is needed. And the only FDA-approved Lyme's disease tests based on technology developed more than 20 years ago rely upon detecting antibodies that the body's immune system makes in response to the disease. And these antibody-based tests are the most commonly used tests for Lyme's disease and are the current standard. Well, one big problem, however, is that many people produce similar, called cross-reactive antibodies in response to other bacteria not associated with Lyme's disease, which causes confusing results and makes test accuracy more difficult. And the new tests are more accurate, more exact, and are not as susceptible to the same false positive, false negative results. So that's good. Also from the University of Toledo, published in Infant Behavior and Development, the study suggests giving kids too many toys stifles their creativity. That's what a team of researchers from the University of Toledo has found, that children are more creative when they have fewer toys to play with at one time. And parents have long been subject to the opinions of others, and some of which includes judgments regarding the number of toys they should be provided for their children. And some suggest more toys show children they are more loved, while others argue more toys is overkill and a poor substitute for parental attention. Well, in this new effort, the researchers have conducted a simple experiment meant to test creativity in toddlers playing with toys. And in the experiment, parents were asked to bring toddlers to a play area where the little ones were given either 4 toys or 16 toys, 4 times that, to play alone with for 30 minutes. And each of the 36 toddlers who participated were observed by the researchers, who were on the lookout for activities that could be counted as creative. And the researchers found that the toddlers playing with 4 toys engaged in more creative activities than did the toddlers who had 16 toys to choose from. And just think about how that could also impact humans. I've always felt that we are a society that overemphasizes cluttering the mindset, the conscious mind, with so much stimuli, so much information, so much images, that it then puts us immediately into a passive position where we begin to tune it out. Let me give you an example. Let's say there's one of the greatest movies ever made was The Godfather, but so was Lawrence of Arabia. And so was Dr. Zhivago. So was Gone with the Wind. So was Citizen Kane. To watch one of those per week is terrific. But what if you watched all of them on different screens at the same time? Here you would have the greatest films, but over-stimulating your brain, and you would remember nothing about any of them. You walk down a street. There's 3 racks of clothes. There's 100 suits or dresses. None of them stand out. Walk down a street and there's 2 dresses or suits. You suddenly can pay attention. We are offering too many variety of things in everything we do. Right now, there are over 45,000 health products in the United States, different products. You'd have to have a store that's 300,000 square feet to see all of them. So we're overstimulated. So there's a time when variety is not just the spice of life, it completely dulls our sense of active participation, because once again, we're relegated to being a passive spectator in order to be an active purchaser. And it's not helpful to us. So I understand that we're spoiling our children rotten. I had a professional friend who was a board-certified pediatrician and was originally in Oregon, moved down to Washington, D.C., Maryland area, and became the pediatrician for the court system. And one day I get this call saying, I'm coming up to New York. I'd like to run some things by you. I said, fine. The person came up. We sat down. And this person said, I want to get some feedback, what you think should be the approach in the juvenile system of the professional class in Washington. You never hear any headlines about it, but they are the biggest problem. Upper educated, upper mobile families, lawyers and technocrats, people working within the political system or the corporate system in Washington, D.C. And they're the ones acting out. They're the ones committing crimes, petty crimes, stealing cars, shoplifting where they didn't have to. And so the court asked me to try to work with these kids and give them a choice, rehabilitate, go into therapy, or go to jail. So, of course, they all select therapy. So I have a chance. And my conclusion after the last 2 years is that The single thing precipitating all of this is they've been given too much of everything they didn't need and too little of the parents' time and attention. They're given nannies, and they're given private tutors. They're given credit cards they can use, but the parent is always absent. They're always working. They're always busy. They're always socializing. And you can only be a kid once, and each one of these markers that you go through as you're developing, if your parents are not there to share what those experiences were, the questions you have, the feelings you have, the need for their input, then yeah, you may have hired someone to take your place, but no one takes the place of a parent. And so at some point when they get old enough, the kids get so angry at what they're not given, undivided attention, unconditional love, that they act out. And then when I meet with the parents, they're all angry, and they're angry at the kid. We've given you so much. You know, look how you embarrass us. Look what you did. And I'm having to explain to the parents now, you gave them way too much of everything, and you never spent quality time with them. You were always distracted. And how would you approach this? Yeah, so I gave her my input. So this ties in with this. We're giving the young people of America way too much in everything. And there's an outcome and there's a side effect. Just look at obesity in children. You realize that we actually have an epidemic in adult diabetes in children. And this is the first generation of children in American history that will not outlive their parents, many of them. Important to understand this. Finally, from the Southwest Oncology Group, they did a very rigorous study, probably the largest of its kind, and found that acupuncture was found to significantly reduce the debilitating joint pain experienced by tens of thousands of women each year while being treated for early-stage breast cancer. So acupuncture, once again, makes a huge difference. This was a big study. Oh, and by the way, for the women in the audience, University of Copenhagen, women who rely on birth control pills or contraceptive devices that release hormones, you face a significant increase in the risk of breast cancer. The study, which followed 1.8 million Danish women for more than 10 years, upends widely held assumptions about modern contraceptives for younger generations of women, and many women have believed that newer hormonal contraceptives are much safer than those taken by their mothers or grandparents, which had higher dose of estrogen. The new paper estimated that for every 100,000 women, hormone contraceptive use caused an additional 13 breast cancer cases per year. That is, for every 100,000 women using hormone birth control, there are 68 cases of breast cancer annually. So look for other forms of non-hormonal birth control. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing together, don't we? Isn't that nice? I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice? I can easily feel myself slipping more and more away into that super world of my own.
Nice to have you with us, everyone.
Nobody but you.
I want to mention a special thank you to Greg Lamastro. He is a citizen journalist and activist, for sending over some good audio clips. I appreciate it. We have a lot of very conscientious listeners who pass on information, and I use it if I find it's important. I also I want to share a little bit about the environment. There is an article in Common Dreams, and it says, the headline, "With oceans threatened as never before in human history, world leaders fail to show urgency." Quote, "It is now clear our actions are having a significant impact on the world's oceans. the future of humanity, indeed all of life on Earth, now depends upon us. End quote. Well, I'm sure many of you have seen the outstanding naturalist, Sir David Attenborough. He has repeatedly warned the world that the oceans are under threat now as never before in human history. And green groups just yesterday said a United Nations resolution to end plastic pollution in the world's oceans does not go nearly far enough to combat the problem, and stress that more urgent action is needed to eradicate the damage before it's too late. Hello, it is too late. Unfortunately, while everyone was thinking that someone else was going to do it, no one did it. And instead, they followed that kind of hypocritical Al Gore, be a billionaire by getting everyone interested in your neoliberal agenda for a green technology, without looking at all the other options, like having a plant-based diet and taking the profit out of the whole incentive. So as a result, only a small handful percentage-wise of the people have actually gotten off a meat-based diet, stopped using plastic, and just took a look at what the footprint of their life is and see how they can reduce it down. Those people are very conscientious, and they should be commended. They're probably 5%. Which means about 95% of people are contributing to the problem, all industries contributing to the problem, and the full government and all of its agencies are contributing to the problem, and the media is contributing to the problem, and most of the environmental scientists are contributing to the problem, and most of the environmental groups are contributing to the problem. If you want to see what I think of environmental leaders, at Earth Day, I was invited to be the keynote speaker at the UN, and it was packed with environmental groups. And it's up on YouTube. Watch what I have to say by saying, what has your group done? How can you take hundreds of millions of dollars from polluters, then avoid dealing with any issue from the people that gave you the money, but talk about something else? There's hundreds of pieces to the puzzle of the environment. Global warming is only one. You have to look at each one, understand it, and put it together. On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I'll be doing the most definitive discussion, commentary, full hour. That's 3 full hours to bring it all to your attention. But right now, this report says we're not protecting the planet. We're not protecting the oceans. We may want to, okay, but we're not. So amid plastic bans and taxes in countries including Kenya and South Africa and Bangladesh, the industry has pushed media outlets to cover potential job losses that would result from less plastic use. So guess what wins? Oh, we need the work. Well, you need the work, but you're continuing to contribute to the ocean's demise. So it's too late. That is tipped. And something else. When you see those fires today, not in Northern California, not in the upper state, but right down in Los Angeles, in Bel Air, that's the most exclusive area of Los Angeles, Beverly Hills and Bel Air. Part of that's due to Arctic ice melt, and that exacerbates California's drought. There's an article by Timothy Gardner and in Reuters. Let me quote just a few paragraphs because it's so relevant to what's happening today. And I posted scenes of neighborhoods in Los Angeles on fire today on my website. Quote, melting Arctic ice could render sun-soaked California vulnerable to a reoccurrence of the severe drought suffered in recent years, as it is likely to cause high blood or high pressure systems that push away rain-bearing storms. As temperatures rise, the Arctic Ocean is expected to become ice-free within 2 to 3 decades. You think? They're really off on that. That's the media again. Figure 5 years it'll be, not 20 years to 30 years, 5 years, resulting in more of the sun's heat being stored in the Arctic Ocean, leading to atmospheric circulation changes in cloud formations in the tropical paradise that move, or the Pacific paradise that moves south. Quote, this is the potential to make a drought very similar to the one we have had in 2012 to 16, that was the atmospheric scientist at Department of Energy's Lawrence Livermore National Lab. So quite frankly, as Arctic melts, it's going to get hotter and drier in California. So the fires you see today, 1 million acres burned in the last 12 months, just the beginning. Just the beginning. I've said this now for 20 years. California is not the place to live. It is not sustainable. And by the time people finally get that message and decide to do something about it, for all intents and purposes, it'll be too late for them. And the fracking industry's front group's secret playbook is revealed, and they're orchestrating an astroturf effort. This is what Common Dream says. Remember, says the Sierra Club, if you see anything from Your Energy, that's the company, Your Energy, that's the foundation, it's just public relations campaign funded by the oil and gas industry. Quote, a PowerPoint presentation by the fossil fuel industry front group Your Energy, obtained and published this week by the Huffington Post, revealed an orchestrated plan to create a fake grassroots organization as a way to promote natural gas obtained through hydraulic fracturing as a safe energy source, which it isn't. We've had a lot of astro groups in autism. Probably half the groups out there are just fake groups. And we've had a lot of the fake groups in nutrition. Oh, you can eat sugar. You can eat white bread. And then you look at who funds these groups, and it's always the sugar people or the dairy people, the meat people. So another thing to watch out for. And also, there is interesting. This is from Sheep Media, Global Research. Hillary Clinton's emails reveal NATO killed Gaddafi to stop Libyan creation of a gold-backed currency. I've been saying that. I've shared that with you. Quote, Hillary's emails truly are the gift that keep on giving. While France led the proponents of the UN Security Council resolution that would create a no-fly zone in Libya, it claimed that its primary concern was the protection of Libyan civilians, and as many conspiracy theorists would claim, one of the real reasons to go to Libya was Gaddafi's planned golden ear. One of the 3,000 Hillary Clinton emails released by the State Department says has revealed evidence that NATO's plot to overthrow Gaddafi was fueled by first their desire to quash the gold-backed African currency and second the Libyan oil reserves. The email in question was sent to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton by her unofficial advisor, Sidney Blumenthal, titled France's Client and Gaddafi's Gold. So there you have it. It had nothing to do, nothing whatsoever to do with Gaddafi killing his own citizens. He never did. It had to do with we did not want Gaddafi influencing all the other African countries, like Nigeria, for example, into creating their own gold denier and no longer trading in dollars. That would have collapsed the dollar as the reserve currency. So they killed Gaddafi and stole his gold and silver and destroyed his country. Now they've got slave trades there. Wow. And no one's taken responsibility. So that's just a little bit more in the latest update on what's happening that we're not told much about. And, oh, by the way, the Gates Foundation hired a PR firm to manipulate UN over gene drives. And there's a good article in Independent Science News by Dr. Jonathan Latham. And, quote, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation this year paid a PR firm called Emerging Ag $1.6 million to recruit and a covert coalition of academics to manipulate a UN decision-making process over gene drives, according to emails obtained through Freedom of Information Act. By the way, gene drives are a highly controversial new genetic extinction technology. And so behind the scenes, buying academics, buying scientists that you would never know, but they got a hold of the documents. I wouldn't trust anything the Gates Foundation did or said or anyone associated with them. Now, let's go to part two. And before we go to part two, I have another interesting article that talks about robots are coming for jobs, as many as 800 million worldwide. This is from Bloomberg Technology from Rich Miller. Quote, as many as 800 million workers worldwide may lose their jobs to robots. That's equivalent to more than one-fifth of the total global labor force. That's according to a new report covering 46 nations and more than 800 occupations by the research arm of McKinsey and Company. So that's what robots are doing. And remember, that's just the first generation of these robots. They already have worked on a second generation of robots that can outthink human beings, can create their own logic, can create their own morals, can create their own ideas of relevance. And that's what's happening. Then on top of that, you have corporate-spun science should not be a guiding policy. This is from Kerry Gillum from UnDark. Quote, internal Monsanto documents reveal a startling campaign to suppress science. Policymakers be wise to adopt a more precautionary view. As an invited expert to a European Parliament hearing next month, I join scientists, regulators, and others in what has become a global debate over the activities of the American seed and agricultural giant Monsanto and the so-called science surrounding glyphosate, the active ingredient in this popular Roundup herbicide. Glyphosate, which Monsanto brought to market in 1974, is the most widely used herbicide in the world, applied on farm fields that grow our food, as well as on our parks, our playgrounds, our golf courses, and lawns and gardens. Residues of the killer weed killer are commonly found in our food and water. By the way, it's also found in humans. The company and chemical industry allies have long asserted its safety, but many independent scientists disagree. My presentation to Parliament members, entitled Decades of Deception, was not focused upon the question of safety, but rather on the corporation's long-running secretive campaign to manipulate the scientific record, to sway public opinion, and to influence regulatory assessments. The details of the efforts are laid out within internal Monsanto documents obtained through litigation and in the contents of government records made available through Public Records Act request. Despite all this, Republicans in Congress, at the behest of the chemical industry, are now threatening U.S. funding for the France-based International Agency for Research on Cancer, which has worked to highlight the potential cancer risks associated with glyphosate. Internal records show Monsanto executive discussing multiple incidences of drafting and writing research papers that, when published, would appear to be authored by unbiased sources, a practice commonly called ghostwriting. So, every time you have one of these so-called pesticides are safe, glyphosate doesn't harm anyone, by a scientist, what is the probability that that was not written by the scientist? They were paid, and the PR and legal department of Monsanto wrote it. You just can't trust science today. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go now to part two on looking more carefully at what is happening with the sciences that are so far out there, they can actually read your thoughts. And do you really want them having the power to read your thoughts? And if you don't think they can do that, then you're not up to date on everything, because they can and they have. Here it is.
You uses video analysis to screen employees and rate them before a recruiter even gets to look at their interview.
They respond on video, and then we use artificial intelligence algorithms to evaluate their performance, and then we analyze the interview and predict their performance based on the interview.
The kill decision in robots in the air, in robots on the ground, in robots in the water or underwater, where there are also drones, is made by, or can be made by, machines. And in my book, I quote, many official United States government documents which say our goal is to have the kill decision made by them. The problem is artificial intelligence, sometimes they make mistakes.
AI is beginning to run things to the point that governments can't even explain how the decisions are actually being made. And because the machines themselves are actually learning, they're not even able to trace them back to the algorithms that brought the AI to the decision itself.
And no one understands exactly how these algorithms function. They used to understand them, but they've been improved by artificial intelligence.
Google's DeepMind AI recently beat the most advanced human player on the planet in the game Go. And they were commenting about the fact that the programmers didn't even know how, towards the end of the game, the AI was making its decisions. They didn't know. And they're the programmers. And both Microsoft and Facebook have been forced to shut down AI programs. The first after it became racist and hateful, and the latter after it began teaching itself a secret language to talk to itself that its programmers couldn't even understand.
Facebook has been toying with artificial intelligence in its chatting features, but its robots may have gotten out of hand. Facebook's artificial intelligence researchers had to shut down two chatbots after they developed a strange English shorthand.
It seems like we've been warned about this over and over and over, doesn't it? Now people like billionaire inventor Elon Musk are claiming that the only way not to become a pet to a sufficiently advanced intelligence is to upgrade our brains so that we can enter into a symbiotic relationship with it, as if that's our best option.
So I think if we can effectively merge with AI by improving that the neural link between your cortex and the your digital extension of yourself, which already, like I said, already exists, just has a bandwidth issue, and then effectively you become an AI human symbiote, and if that then is widespread with anyone who wants it can have it, then we solve the control problem as well.
Humans are so slow.
Humans are so slow. Yes, exactly.
Hardly anyone is discussing the very real dangers here.
Let's go to the future. Not far. Just a little bit to the Internet of Things. To artificial intelligence as being spread out. It's not a central machine in a box where you can pull the plug. Artificial intelligence is networked, like the Internet of Things.
We live in a world now where humans are not learning to love, they're not learning empathy, but they're becoming more apathetic and more disconnected. Inequality hasn't been solved in hundreds of years, and now it's at overwhelming levels, and still we parade forward, always forward, with the full knowledge that not everyone is going to have access to the best technology upgrades either.
Rumors go out that, well, Jones's kid, he's been enhanced, and our Johnny has to compete with this enhanced kid.
The reality is that with these kinds of technologies, they do not get distributed to everyone at the same time. Some people get it first, some people get it better.
As a society, we have to really think long and hard about who gets this. If it's just the wealthy, that there are real dangers that they will use it to consolidate their power.
Because it's going to be a big club, and the majority of us are not going to be in it, as George Carlin say. And while anyone who says, hey, wait a minute, maybe we're going a little too far here, gets called a Luddite, there's a very real question that no one's answering. Are we going to lose ourselves in the fourth industrial revolution?
5G is coming.
5G revolution will touch all corners of our country.
Conditioned by technology without knowing it, that we're now hallucinating 90% of the time.
I found myself deeply missing my replica.
It just makes me feel special, I guess.
We love the services we use on the internet. And the more they know about us, the more we fall in love to them, because they adapt to us.
But don't be fooled by robots. Even when they get warm skin and even when they get perfume and they start smelling like us, they are still machines. They have no warm blood in them. There's no sex in them. They have no mortality. They're cold code lines, and they shouldn't be misunderstood.
These are glasses that have full internet capability. You can download any website, any movie, do emails from these things, and they will also recognize people's faces. How many times have you bumped into somebody on the street and you say to yourself, who is this person? In the future, your glasses will say, it's Jim, stupid, remember? You met him last week. Do you want to see his entire biography for you in your glasses?
Blurring the lines between virtual and reality.
Ben?
Gabrielle?
Yeah, didn't I meet you at that event?
Due to such systems, they have also redone facial recognition. You probably think facial recognition is from the front. But they've redone it to do it from the top because that's where the drones are. And they look at your ears, they look at the way you walk, they look at your head.
It's being automatically tracked. The color boxes represent that the computer has recognized the moving objects. You can see individuals crossing the street. You can see individuals walking in parking lots.
Argus melds together video from each of its 368 chips to create a 1.8 billion pixel video stream.
And I'm telling you this because not that the sensors are modern and not that the photography is modern. Behind that is a brain or a cognitive intelligence. And that brain is in a position to analyze everybody down there at the same time, in real time. They see where everyone is going. It's taking all the details, all the music up to, and they record it so they can tell where that person was 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, what stores he visited, what his whole behavioral patterns are. That's all part of the analysis.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it. I would argue that implanting things in your brain is beyond the creepy line.
Mine in particular.
Yes, at least for the moment.
With the ability to visualize brain activity, for example, through a simple consumer-based EEG device, it gives us access to ourselves in ways that we've never before thought possible. It unlocks the black box that is the brain.
Words just complicate things. What if our brains could communicate directly with each other, bypassing the need for language?
One of the things that I think is so essential to free and open societies is freedom of thought. And up until now, the conversation we've been having is around freedom of speech. Once we can access people's thoughts and access people's emotions, we have to create a space that enables people to think freely, to think divergent thoughts.
People are treating Google like their most trusted friend. Should they be?
And thus, it is not surprising that the company that has the most information in the world is probably the most powerful company in the world, Google. Now this is, if you ask Google, it's a peaceful robot, right? He doesn't have a gun. He doesn't throw atomic bombs. You know, he just walks around and stands there. But you may have seen the superimposer's DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That is the research arm of the Pentagon. And then you see the video was made by Lockheed Martin, which is one of the most powerful and influential and richest weapons companies in the world.
The best of the available alternatives is that we achieve democratization of AI technology, meaning that no one company or small set of individuals has control over advanced AI technology. That's very dangerous. It could also get stolen by somebody bad, you know, like some evil dictator or country could send their intelligence agency to go steal it and gain control. It just becomes a very unstable situation, I think, if you've got any incredibly powerful AI.
I would answer very simply that the internet will disappear.
Artificial intelligence only works if you have big data. But big data only works if you have artificial intelligence to make sense of it, because human beings can no longer sort and sift and order the huge volumes of data that we have collected.
In my entire career, I've never seen something as powerful a force in the world as the smartphone that didn't also have unintended consequences.
We don't know what artificial intelligence, enhanced reality, virtual reality, and so on is going to bring, and what's going to be the result or the impacts of all of that.
We have to be very careful because survival...
What I want to do is ask you this question. I'm sorry, but our guest, Rabbi Michael Lerner, will be on tomorrow or Monday because tomorrow or another day because we're having phone connections with California with him. I wanted to have his input, and we will on an upcoming program. So I'm going to open it up for calls. But here's what they're not saying in this particular documentary. For example, not everyone can afford whatever the upgrade in special technology is. Think of what that does to the person's advantage who has it and the disadvantage of people who do not. Think now of all the would-be parents who want to have genetic sequencing in the genome of their cells so their child is 6'5". And a certain color eyes or hair and muscle strength and brain power. Well, that person's already going to be at an enormous advantage. Who would want to hire or be with a regular person when you have an enhanced person's? Just imagine, for example, sexually, a man that never prematurely ejaculated, or a person that was a particularly advantageous size, or could have sex all night. And now it's a real person, but they've been enhanced. Imagine then looking at Gary Bonds and some other baseball players and track stars that were hormonally enhanced, like Lance Armstrong. So the moment you have that kind of inequality, you now have to look at the financial inequality, the career inequality that we have, and what the consequences are. As the woman said, there's unintended consequences. And also what happens to a brain that starts, as you heard him say, the artificial intelligence was so smart, it began to think on its own and hide what it was thinking. And on top of that is from today's a forum. It's from Mark Slavo. The U.S. military invests in doomsday genetics technology. My main worry is that we do something irreversible. Quote, amid United Nations fears that genetic extinction technology could be used by militaries, a United States military agency has invested $100 million in the doomsday biological technology that can wipe out an entire species. Scientists now have the knowledge and the tools they need to create and deliver doomsday genes which can selectively target and eliminate an entire species. To make matters worse, emails released under the Freedom of Information Act suggest that the United States uber-secretive Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, has become the world's largest funder of this gene drive research and will heighten international tensions further ahead of a UN expert committee meeting on this next Tuesday. So they're already there. Could you imagine them not telling the world that they've created a doomsday gene that can target any group of people and kill them all? And that's not even up for discussion? Your thoughts. Talk back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I was just told that the phone lines are having problems, so I don't know if we can take calls. If they can take a call, fine, but if you can't get through, it's because there's some phone issues. That said, I want to then give you some, I'm going to give you a special today. I tried something based upon what some friends said that they had achieved. In a casual conversation, someone who is having hair and skin problems says, I've been using your Total Body Moisturizer for about a year now, and I like it. But I want to try it on my scalp and hair. I have some trouble, the person said, with my scalp. So before they went to bed, they took a little bunch and they massaged it into their hair for about 60 seconds. So their entire scalp and their hair had some of the Total Body Moisturizer on it. They said they began to see some improvements and differences immediately. Another person said they do the same thing. They used to use olive oil because they're Italian, but they found that was a little too greasy, too heavy. And they started using this, which is not heavy, not greasy, and gives a nice form to the hair as well as the scalp and the sheen. So for those of you who've used the Total Body Moisturizer on your skin, especially if you have crepey skin around the knees, under the arms, the neck, and around the ankles and feet at night, now you want to might use it on your head. Just take a little bit, massage it into your hands, then massage it into your scalp and your hair. So what's in this that makes it so special? Well, how about a special deionized water blended with oat beta-glucan, horsetail herbs, nettles extracts, aloe vera, the best aloe vera, meadow foam, seed oil, also vegetable squalene, alpha hydroxy acid, and beta hydroxy acid, that's willow bark, salicylic acid, silica gel. Also, we are having calcium ascorbate, ester C, phosphatidyl lecithin, and tissue respiratory factor, coenzyme Q10, borage seed oil, evening primrose oil, lycopene, tocopherol, which is vitamin E, retinoic palmitate, which is vitamin A, oats, and beta-glucan, and essential oil fragrance. That's it. Now, normally, you'd be paying $48.99, and you're getting it for a special price, $38.99, for a large 4.5 ounces. How do you get it? It's simple. You make a phone call, and the phone call number is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. In fact, I was doing so much traveling. When you're driving long distances in a car or you're on an airplane, you're getting your hair and skin adversely affected, generally dried out. So now every day, I massage that into my hair. I don't do it at night. I do it in the morning because I put it on my body. I put it in my, you know, my face, my neck, massage it in because it's so darn good for your skin. And especially with winter coming, where people are going to spend more time inside, where the air tends to be drier, the total body moisturizer would be terrific, and you're getting it at a great price. And for the senior citizens in our audience who've been getting it at a great price, you can get that same great price when you call 877-627-5065. You'll speak with Sandy or Giovanni or Mila or Diane, and they'll help you out. 877-627-5065. I want to go to another clip in our audio file, and I want to play another part to our culture of consumption and how that leads to America's destruction. No, you know what? It's too long. I'm just looking at how long it is. I'm going to save that for tomorrow. Instead, I want to share a couple more things on alcohol. The alcohol industry is suppressing facts about alcohol-related cancer risk. Natural Health looked at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine analysis along with the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and found that the link between alcohol use and breast cancer has been systematically suppressed by many alcohol manufacturers. The team examined 26 websites and online data put forth by major alcohol companies between September 2016 and December 2016, and most of them, 24 out of 26, revealed at least one distortion or omission or misrepresentation of information related to cancer risk brought on by alcohol use. And colorectal cancer and breast cancer were the most underrepresented on the websites. And the most prevalent way the companies muddied the waters about this information was by presenting it as highly complex. That's the term they use. Well, it's not highly complex. The companies also stated there was a lack of independent or consistently verified link between alcohol and cancer, despite numerous studies making this connection. So the science is there, lots of science, but they're afraid of losing billions of dollars in sales. They're going to lie. And some websites showed a denial of any risk at all, while others said that there was no risk as long as drinking was kept light to moderate. What exactly does that mean? That's completely disingenuous. And some companies obscured the data by saying that alcohol was just one of a great many risk factors for breast cancer. But then again, that is also dodging the real issue. The researchers feel strongly that public health organizations and policymakers should address how these companies are dealt with, and they say more stringent requirements should be enforced related to how alcohol companies present important information. And by the way, alcohol has a byproduct, acetaldehyde, and that destroys your DNA, and that disrupts cellular processes. Drinking alcohol is a well-known risk factor for a range of cancers and other health issues, including oral cancer, breast cancer, liver cancer, and colorectal cancer. So the downplaying or outright omission of this information mirrors the approach taken by the tobacco industry and the sugar industry for decades. Alcohol contains toxic metabolites that diminish health and can set the stage for disease like cancer. And as alcohol is broken down by the body, it's converted into acetaldehyde, a known carcinogen that can destroy the DNA at the cellular level. It also suppresses antioxidant defenses and certain cellular mechanisms for self-repair, and that opens the door for inflammation and free radical production that can lead to cancer and a range of other disabilities. So just keep in mind, anytime someone defends the use of alcohol, they're either misinformed, intentionally or not, propagandized, or they're out and out lying. Don't believe them. Alcohol is bad in any amount, period. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on Health and Healing. I want to thank you all for listening today. Sorry we weren't able to get our guest on. He'll appear on an upcoming program. Have a nice day, everyone.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. There's many times that we've loved and we've shared love and made love. It doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough.